Good afternoon and welcome to Angel Answers. I'm your host, Amy Toy. We have a return guest who is very gracious to come on again. His name is David Salisbury. He is the author of The Deep Heart of Witchcraft, which is an awesome book if you're into Wicca, and we're going to explain some things about the basics. We're going to go back if you missed the show a couple months ago. And David is a Wiccan clergy with the Coven of the Spiral Moon, a coven based in the Washington, D.C. area, and the focal point of his spiritual practice is one of service, activism, and respect. And he started as a witch at a very young age, and he uses the unique views of the next generation pagan leadership to create a practice that is steeped in tradition yet colored in progress. And his book is out now. David, welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on. Well, let's give a little bit of review for some of the, you know, members of the audience who didn't hear, you know, from you last week. There's the pentagram, which we discussed, which discusses what are the five elements in that pentagram?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the five elements on the pentagram are earth, air, fire, water, and spirit, which isn't technically a worldly element, but it connects the other four.
Okay. And we discussed why it's so important to connect with the elements. You want to give us a little brief overview of earth, and we'll go from there? Like, why would we want to do the earth element and then the fire element and so on? Let's go a little backwards. Spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's great. Well, so important to connect to the elements every day. You know, all our everything in the universe is made up of some kind of elements. And of course, there are more than four elements if you look on the periodic table. But for the sake of practical spirituality, we work with earth, air, fire, and water. And so the witches really look at how we can use the elements in our day-to-day life to help us tune ourselves better to the environment around us. So if you look at earth, for example, that's the element of stability, grounding, worldly things. You know, we live on the earth. So when we connect with the element earth, we're grounding our practice. We're taking spirit into form. So it's an element of manifestation, growth.
Okay. And in the book, which I thought was interesting, I wanted to ask you this last time we didn't get to it. You refer to earthwalking. What is that?
Oh, yeah. Earthwalking is a really wonderful technique where you walk in any setting, whether it's urban or, rural. And as you walk, you draw in the energy of the earth through, you know, whether it be the soles of your feet or the crown of your head. You know, you can imagine the soles of your feet extending roots below you, and you're drawing up that earth energy. I first heard of that technique in Starhawk's book, The Earth Path. She recommends that, and a lot of different spiritual teachers have a similar technique. But, yeah, it's a really great practice for, you know, people who live anywhere. I'm a really big fan of having an embodied practice that you can take anywhere with you, mostly because, you know, when life hands you lemons, you're most likely not going to be sitting in the peaceful space of your altar or in church. You know, you're going to be rushing the kids off to school. You're going to be at work. So I really love exercises that you can do anywhere at any time. And that's one of them.
And that helps, would you say that helps with grounding as well?
Absolutely. It can also help with just nurturing your life force energy in general. It's it can give the same effect as, you know, some of the more new age inclined folks would say that you get from hugging a tree. You know, you're, yeah, which, you know, it's really funny to talk about, and not a lot of people do because it sounds so silly, but that actually does really renew life force energy. But, you know, a lot of people are really nervous or feel silly about doing something like that, especially in front of other people. So earthwalking is a great way to, you know, you just walk. No one can tell what you're doing. You know, you can be on the subway. I do it on the subway. You know, no one can tell what you're doing.
Especially in New York City if you're on the subway system. They wouldn't care if you hug a tree in Central Park, right? But
yeah. Well, and I live in Washington, D.C., and, you know, unless you're on the National Mall, there isn't a whole lot of trees around, you know, the downtown area where I work. So, but, you know, the roots of the trees are connected to, you know, the soil base that other, you know, plants and things have their, you know, shared soil structure. So, you know, with earth walking, you can connect to that whole kind of root structure anywhere. You don't really have to have a tree before you.
Yeah, I've actually done that. I'm a Pisces. I get ungrounded all the time.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the whole earth walking thing, because I really wish I could source this study, and I can't, but I read a study a month ago that said that people who have their bare feet touching soil or grass for an hour a day are statistically more likely to live 10 years longer.
Oh, really? Well, I do that all the time. I'm barefoot all the time, and I go out in the backyard, and, you know, and yeah, wow, cool.
I love, yeah, yeah, and I, forgive me, don't know where I read that, but, I, you know, I'm sure folks can Google it, but I mean, it makes sense. You know, people who are more likely to do that are probably more likely out getting fresh oxygen, you know, walking around, doing things like that.
Yeah, because it's awesome when you can do that thing. And let's go into some of the other elements. Like, what about, let's go into the water. What the heck? We might as well. We're going backwards.
Yeah,
what does water represent briefly? What does it, you know, and how can we use that element to help us in our embodiment of our spiritual practices?
Water is all things feminine and lunar. So you think of goddess energy, the womb. So that's all things related to intuition, creativity, emotion, inspiration. All of those things are ruled by water. So in my personal practice, I work with water when I want to just have a practice that's in the flow, you know, in the moment. So I find it easier to walk through life spiritually when you're not constantly struggling and fighting against everything that's, you know, coming at you or working with you. You know, with the element of water, we can learn to kind of pivot and shift our reactions to things, both, you know, spiritually, mentally, and physically, because that's what the water does. You know, it doesn't try to overpower things. It slowly carves its course out over time. And, you know, some days it might feel like you're a little trickling stream, and some days you might feel like the water that carves out the caverns of the Grand Canyon. So water is a really powerful element that doesn't often get the respect that it deserves in terms of its power. But, you know, folks I know who are really connected to the water element has such a great ability to move and shift and change without really fighting against things.
Yeah, as from my own personal experience, when you fight things, it takes longer to get through things. It's like you might as well just surrender and allow things to be, because it's going to work out anyway.
Right, and the alchemically, water teaches us about dissolution, dissolving something into another so it can become a greater part of the whole. And I love teaching that to students, because one of the things that some people can get into a trap with, I feel, with spirituality is that some people just try to banish everything from their life that is inconvenient or hard or doesn't serve them. And water teaches you that you can partner with those things. You can work with them, let them flow into you, fully integrate them so that you can, you know, become empowered by it.
Right. Well, if you face things and deal with things head on, you can get through life a little bit more with grace and honor and ease, you know, and people
right.
don't get that. They're like, what you resist persists, and, you know, you resist
yeah.
it. It's going to continue to get caught up in your life. So this, I think with Wicca, it helps you to kind of use another technique or an outlet to, you know, kind of, I don't know, just go with the flow of life. And like we said, we'll go through the elements and to help people
yeah.
integrate that. And, you know, it's
I love that you mentioned Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I love that you mention resistance particularly, because I think resistance can be a really helpful teacher if people approach it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you look at the thing that's resisting you, some people look at whatever that thing is and say, oh, that's a bad thing. You know, that's something that I don't want to work with or face, as you were saying. But, you know, we can use resistance as a gauge to learn where our comfort levels are. and what things are, you know, worth risking or worth engaging in. Mm-hmm. You know, I forget who said that wonderful quote, do what you're most afraid of. I don't know who said that, but I love it. I see it as a meme on Facebook all the time, and that reminds me of water and resistance.
Yeah, you know, and you can tell those who are so set in their ways. I was doing something on Saturday, and you could tell, you know, we were having a meeting, a business meeting about something, and this person just, you could tell, did not want to make changes. And there's so many new people in this business situation that I'm talking about that you could just tell they did not want to do it.
Right.
You know, and it's like change is inevitable. What happens, and water can really help us do that. I mean, you know, I have no earth in my chart whatsoever, so when you said about the tree hugging, I do that. I don't care. I'm a professed tree hugger, but because I'm so emotional, the emotions have to, you know, you have to balance it out, but emotions are good.
Absolutely.
You know? So, and let's go, you're a Leo, if I remember correctly, right? So let's talk about the
Leo. I am.
Fire. Let's talk about the fire. Yes, I love fiery stuff. How can we use that? How can we learn from that element?
Yeah, I love fire. Interesting, as soon as you mentioned bringing up fire, a fire truck just drove by my building. So fire is making its presence known.
Guess but, so.
Yeah, so fire is the element of courage, creativity in the kind of spark of the divine kind of way. So creativity that's based in inner sight rather than emotion. It's an element of a renewal, cleansing, you know, things are cleansed in the fire, which is primarily work with fire as a tool of transformation. So, you know, you can look at the cauldron as a tool of fire, you know, a common practice in witchcraft is to put things that you wish to be transformed into the cauldron, and you light it on fire. And it combines those two elements of water, which is the cauldron, it's the womb of the goddess, and then fire, which is the symbol of the sun, of the god, the divine masculine. So, fire is integration with all of those things that, you know, we need to fuel us. I talk a lot about bringing things into your life that empower you, that feed your life force energy, and fire is a great reminder to just constantly be doing things that make you burn with excitement and passion.
Yes, yes. It's so important that you find something you love to do in this lifetime.
Absolutely. And fire can be tricky because the overculture has a lot of it makes us think strange things about what we should be passionate about. Mm-hmm. You know, like people say, you know, if you're truly living an embodied, impassioned existence, you should be doing a career that you're known for and, you know, have the money and the house and the kids and all that. But, you know, for some people, their passion is, you know, working in a soup kitchen, or it's their day job at their desk, or it's being a spiritual teacher. That manifests in all these different ways, just like fire does, right? Because sometimes it's the candle flames at the altar, or it's the blaze in, you know, California at this time of year coming up. So
yeah, definitely. And, you know, fire to me is just putting my ideas into action, my ideas, my dreams into action too. So that's when I think of fire, especially when I'm doing my tarot readings. You know, the element of fire is, I believe, there's debate stabs, I believe, you know, and that's the element of fire, putting things into action. So wonderful.
Yeah. Letting a fire under ourselves.
Yeah, well, I know some people who need that, and sometimes you just pray to God that they get out of their heads, like the element of air. Yeah. Well, how can we use air in our spiritual practices? I think air is important. That's where the ideas come from, at least, you know, but how can we use it in our lives with the ritual?
Yeah, well, like you said, air is where thought comes from, ideas. It's it's all things mercurial, so it guides communication, insight in the intellectual sense, ideas in the intellectual sense, and air is the great connector. So, you know, it's air is the least dense of the elements, so it can fit in between all of those little crevices and all of those spaces. So it has a great ability to get around. So we use air to send prayers. You know, the smoke of incense is usually identified with the element of air in most Wiccan circles. The wand is the tool of air, which directs will and life force energy to get to its direction. So I love air because it reminds me to breathe, and more of us need to breathe.
Yeah, because when we are uptight or upset, we tend to see not to breathe, or we hyperventilate, or we shorten our breaths. And that's one thing I was taught early back in the day when I was learning how to get through things. You know, deep belly breathing. Breathing helps us get through things a lot easier if we can just remember to deep breathe. And that's why yoga is good and all that other stuff. I'm not going to go into that, but that's good. Just to breathe and just think and get into the
mind. And most people aren't taught how to breathe well.
True, yes, you know, that's correct.
We think that breath is always in the lungs. It's something we do unconsciously, but, you know, transformative breathing can do all of these interesting things to our bodies, our minds, our spirits when we do it with presence and with intention. And students that I teach, you know, in the Wicca and Witchcraft 101 classes where we actually get into activities, we spend a long time on breath.
Wow.
Almost to the point where people get annoyed, like, are we going to do something else besides breathing?
Maybe I need this today, you guys. You know, more of the instructor needs it more of the teacher than they do. I don't know.
Right. Well, and you know, it's one of those fundamental things that sometimes we forget. Sometimes I forget to breathe myself, and, you know, I have to whack myself in the head with that stick and say, breathe, you know. I work in an office setting. Sometimes I schedule reminders on my little Outlook calendar once every other hour, and it'll just say, breathe, in capital letters.
I just hit affirmations when I was working as a paralegal on my computer screen on my monitor.
Yeah. You know, whatever works.
Yeah. I did have one affirmation. I am the life force that connects all, or something like that. It was funny. I used to say that. I'm like, really? I connect idiots around? No, <I'm just>
Well, that's, you know, air is the great connector, you know. The idiots among us, the brilliant people among us, we're all breathing air, so.
Well, this is back in the day now. This is like back 5-6 years ago when I was working. Now I work from home in my own element. I can breathe whenever I want, you know, so thank God for small miracles.
I know.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Let's go into the element of spirit a little bit. That's kind of what I wanted to talk about. I mean, how would we use spirit? And I wanted to ask about the Wiccan belief systems that I've heard. I have a best friend who's a Norse Wiccan, so he talks about different things. So let's enlighten some people because, you know, he's told me some stuff, and I want to kind of get your view. So how do we use the spiritual element, the spirit element of spirit? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, well, that's a great descriptor for it, you know. The spiritual nature of the element of spirit, you know, it's the concept within a concept, the microcosm within the macrocosm. So spirit, you know, we connect the other four elements in kind of the compass point directions that we usually think of, north, south, east, and west, and spirit is considered center. So it's the in-between spaces. You can think of it as interstellar space, the space between the stars, between everything. And spirit is interesting because it's within all of the elements, and it exists outside of each of the elements. So whereas air is the connector of all of the elements in their physical manifestation, spirit is the connector of all of the elements, both in our physical world and in all of the worlds beyond. So when we're we primarily use spirit when we're, say, casting the circle, which is a practice in Wicca where you mark out the boundary of your space in a circle by projecting energy around you. And what that does is it puts you between all of the worlds, so the worlds of thought, the worlds of form, magic, manifestation. You're between all of those worlds, the idea being that when you're between all of them, you're connected to the energies and the presences of all of that. So that's what spirit does, and that's why it's so important for us to use it, because if you use all of the elements, you know, kind of in your day-to-day worldly existence, but you're not including spirit, then your work isn't going to reach all of the worlds. And, you know, witchcraft in particular is a has a multi-world belief system. So, you know, we believe that a lot of things start in, you know, another world, you know, worlds on, say, higher or lower vibrations. And then depending on the type of energy, it either trickles up or it trickles down. And all of that process of transference happens through spirit. So if we want to make change on all the worlds, you know, have it be a complete holistic thing, then we incorporate spirit.
Okay. Let's talk about a little bit, which is, you know, working with the dead. I thought that was interesting, communicating with the dead. Can you tell us a little bit how Wiccans do that? I mean, I thought that was interesting. You mentioned something about that when I read it. It was actually pretty cool.
Yeah. I actually get the most comments about that from Wiccans in particular who read it, because Wiccans primarily honor the dead on a holiday we have called Samhain on October 31st, which most know is Halloween. And that's the day where we honor and respect the process of death and people in our lives and outside of our lives who have gone before, because we believe that they guide our lives and our work from the other world. The issue, though, is that some folks only have certain times where they take a moment to honor the dead, whether it be just on Samhain or just on, say, the birthday or the death day of a loved one. But one of my teachers really encouraged me to look beyond, you know, just honoring the dead in one particular holiday. That, you know, the dead are around us all the time, so we should acknowledge and work with them all the time. And I got to tell you, as soon as I started doing that, my whole practice just changed. You know, my work felt more effective. It felt more connected. I found it easier to make wisened decisions. Because the thing about the dead, as opposed to, say, the gods, is that the gods are really interested in kind of our overarching evolution, whereas the dead, our ancestors, our beloved guides, they're really interested in kind of our real-world success in addition to our spiritual well-being. But say as, you know, someone might feel uncomfortable maybe approaching a god to, say, get a loan. You know, I talked about this last week on a show about how some people feel guilty or strange contacting a god form for such worldly things like that, because a lot of us are taught that, you know, money is the root of all evil, you know, the money, things like that in the world aren't divine. So the dead can help us get beyond that because they want us to succeed. You know, say I would work with my grandfather, for example, who passed, and he was a mechanic. So I cannot do anything with cars to save my life. So thank goodness my papa's around in the other side, because, you know, when the car is starting to go south, I'm like, all right, papa, I need your help here. Car's going south. Help connect me to a good, you know, reputable mechanic. Help me get on my way in the meantime. Because, you know, the dead don't lose their personality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I totally get where you're coming from with that. I went down to Lilydale yesterday. I've been there in like 12 years, and went to a spiritualist church, and when she, you know, gave me a message about it, was, I know it was my great aunt, you know, who came through, and she's like, yeah, and I said, yeah, she still hasn't lost her personality, been dead 21 years, you know, still coming through.
Yeah, and it's a hard thing to think about, because a lot of us like to think that our loved ones just immediately go to a space of pure peace and pure enlightenment, and they kind of dissolve into oneness. And I totally respect people who have that belief system, but my personal belief in most modes of witchcraft is that we're multi-souled or multi-spirit-based beings, we humans. So we have a part of us that when we die retains our personality. And that's the part of us who we commune with when we're talking to ancestors. And then we also have a part of our soul that does go straight to the divine, and then we have another part of ourself that goes back to the earth. And that's a really weird concept for some people to grasp, because most people think of having one soul, right?
Exactly. And I didn't know that either until I had a friend of mine who was in, would communicate with the other side. She did mention that.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend who's a Norse Wiccan, too, he did, my guide was coming through and I was channeling that to him, and he was just totally amazed. He's like, really? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
It does happen, okay? Get over it.
And it's a hard concept to grasp because, when we think of consciousness, we think of, just what we see and think and communicate with right now when we're alive. So it's really hard to imagine that we can have different consciousness, what is the plural? that kind of split after death. So and we'll never really know what that experience is like until we have it.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's really cool to bring up. Now, what Wiccans believe in, what they call, when you cross over to the other side, when you pass away from this change from this life to that, to going to the other side, the Wiccans believe in the Summerland, is it called, or what? I don't know if I'm got the right terminology.
Yeah, the Summerland is the right term, or Elfame. It's considered a place of temporary rest. Most Wiccan traditions believe in reincarnation in one form or another. So the Summerland is really a place where we can go and have communion with, the personality-based consciousness of our ancestors who've gone before us. And then we kind of review our life before, see what, we were successful with, what we, might like to work on a little more in the next life. Take a break.
Yeah, really.
To take a break for a little bit, and then when we're ready, we work with whatever spirit beings are there who have chosen to kind of stay behind and guide us through the process of going into our next life. So, and the way that manifests is really different for so many people. I mean, some people, a lot of people say, if you could just be in this place of eternal summer, that's kind of like heaven, why wouldn't you just stay there? Why would you come back? And the answer to that is that we believe that our souls, our beings, were designed to move forward, to always be in process. We believe that the divine is always in a process of creation and destruction, and so are our bodies and souls. So, when we go to the other side, we have our break, and then we also have this strong desire to go back and to further our work and to further, the work of the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that totally. We're here to grow and learn, and sometimes some of us don't get the lessons better than others, so you gotta come back and do it all over again. And that is very true. Yeah, that's interesting.
And some souls decide to have lives that are a little more difficult than others, because the thing about being on the other side is that sometimes if we're there for a while, we can forget kind of the real world feelings and concerns. A lot of Wiccans have an idea that we have these things called soul contracts, which exist in a lot of other different spiritualities, but essentially we kind of decide ahead of time what our lives are going to be like, what challenges we want to have. So, if you have a really kind of brazen, excited spirit on the other side, you're going to look at your life as kind of one big challenge, maybe, because we learn fastest through challenges. We don't stop learning when we're happy, of course, or when we're having a good time. We learn through those experiences too, but challenges propel us, and they kind of jumpstart our experience with wisdom. So, I like to say that souls who have particularly difficult lives or even short lives, they kind of they're the brave souls, because they decided to jumpstart their evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I must have jumpstarted something on the other side, because it's been one thing after another.
I know. I should clarify that by saying that doesn't mean that I believe that everyone who has terrible things in their life happen means that, they chose it to happen, or that it was supposed to happen. Because, there's certain tragedies and, terrible things that happen in the world that you know, no spirit would consciously choose to enact.
Right.
And, you know, all I can say to that is that, you know, because of free will, because of the fact that we are dense physical beings in this dense physical atmosphere with emotions and thoughts and all of that swirled together, we do things unconsciously that throw us out of balance. And that's why personally I believe that, you know, bad things can happen, and why, you know, people can do seemingly evil things. It's because they're out of balance. They're out of touch with what, you know, their soul was put here to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but I always feel like if I'm going through challenges, that means that I'm going to be okay when I get to the other side. I transcended a lot of stuff. So I'm
right.
cool with it. I'm cool with it. And I think that's what can make... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm
just
sorry.
What I was going to say. Oh, no, that's just what I was going to say. You know, people who tend to have kind of a proactive view of embodying spirituality tend to be a little more resilient with the punches that life throws, because we know that it's not going to be the end of the world. We know that we have a certain amount of control.
Right. Yeah, and sometimes we're meant to relinquish control, because we just need to surrender to whatever we need to surrender to. And I think I'm learning that through, I think, the past couple, last 5 years of my life, God, learning to, you know, just surrender to things, because I can't control it anyway, so it's always for my highest and best good. Anyway, that's the way I view things. Things always work out. You know, do my part, but, you know, let things move forward. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about, we talked about working with the gods and goddesses, you know, over on the other side, or the god. I want to talk about the god element again, about the poet, father, sage element. Why is it so difficult for some to connect with God as opposed to the goddess, you know, mindset? Why do you think that is?
Yeah. Well, you know, I can speak to that on a personal level, because I was one of those pagans who went into nature-based spirituality kind of disillusioned with the idea of, you know, the deity that I was kind of always exposed to, which was kind of the jealous, angry god of Christianity. And, you know, even though I didn't grow up Christian, that was still kind of, you know, the cultural view of God around me, you know, in the South. So even though I, you know, wasn't raised with that mentality, it was still all around me. So when I came to Wicca and was learning about the gods, you know, I associated with a male deity aspect with all of those kind of negative connotations. And it took me a really long time to see past that, to see that, you know, the male god in Wicca is, you know, it's the same thing as the monotheistic god, but it's also totally different, you know, based on personality, because, you know, the god of Wicca is very, projective, you know, it's all the projective energies like the sun, you know, all of those qualities that make us want to kind of put ourselves out there rather than receive, which is kind of the feminine energy. I feel like when people come to a nature-based faith, they're reprogramming themselves to listen and to look at things and to kind of receive and take in that information. And that's what the goddess gives, and that's great. But we also have to awaken that part of us that puts our will out into the world, that, you know, takes action and creates change. And that can feel uncomfortable for a lot of people, understandably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can. And, you know, I view God, the male part of it, as my father, you know, my father who, you know, is more than what my earthly father was, but that's how I view it, him as, you know, the loving God who doesn't, you know, judge me like that, you know, guy in the white beard who's going to cast hell, you know, put me in hell in judgment because I didn't do something, you know. I view God as like that. I think it takes a long time to go through that process, though, because you're right, we were brought up with certain ideas of what God is.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, Wiccans find it really helpful to kind of give different archetypes to the God. You know, in the book I talk about the phases of the sage and the poet and the father, and all of those archetypes can help us connect based on whatever our relationship is with the God at that time. So, you know, say if you're if you grew up with experiences of a father who was a lot older, say he physically exemplified the sage, but really didn't act like a sage, you know, say he was abusive or uncaring or things like that, you know, you can work up to connecting with that God form by going back and working with, you know, the poet, the younger aspect. You know, it might be, you know, if you're a woman or a gay man, the poet might manifest as kind of your first love, the first man that you ever, you know, fell in love with or found yourself attracted to. You know, a lot of witches can view the gods with kind of a youthful appearance. You know, it's the sexually active concept of deity. This sounds really strange to people who grew up with a Christian upbringing. But if that's what helps you connect to deity, then that's perfectly valid.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that just studying different thought forms for me, you know, I think it has opened my eyes to different things, too, especially with the God energy, I call it, you know. So
right.
It's really good. That's very helpful because people do have this idea different than the goddess. So you want to go
and
through... Yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, a big problem with connecting with either the god or the goddess, you know, some people go in and have trouble connecting with goddess rather than god, and I just want to say that I think that a lot of this really stems to misunderstandings of gender and disproportionate relationships with gender. So, you know, I would just encourage people that if you're having trouble connecting to either one, just for the sake of kind of that God's gender identity, then, you know, look to the self, see what your own kind of personal hang-ups around that is, and you'll really find that your relationship to the gods in that way will probably change too.
Okay. Yeah, excellent. Yes. That's a good suggestion. Because I do have, I love connecting with the goddess energy, but I have trouble with different aspects of it. Especially maiden, mother, crone, the mother part of it. So,
yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
You don't have to have children to be the mother.
Yeah, exactly. I have 5 cat children now, so that's enough for me. And then a fiancé, too, that's a good big child. So.
Yep. Are you at a point in your life where you're, you know, nurturing and giving birth to a project? You know, that's the mother, too.
Exactly. You can give birth to things in other ways instead of child, you know, earth, you know, earthbound child. And, you know, I think that, you give birth to, you can be nurturing in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Right.
Good point. See? Told you if we're going to have talk about more deeper stuff today.
Yeah. I love this stuff, especially.
I do too.
It's all interesting.
It's all good because this helps other people. I wanted to touch base a little bit about the only thing I use in my ritual is incense and stones and a wand.
Mm.
Why would we want to use incense? You mentioned about the element of prayer. It carries prayers up. What are different there's different incense. What do you suggest for people, you know, people looking into starting their practice? Mm. What kind of incense would you suggest to start out with? Or is there anything to start out with? Or I don't know what your take is on that.
Well, incense is a really wonderful tool because it is kind of a way to materialize air because we can't see air. So incense gives us kind of a focal point for that, right? So, you know, we look at the act of prayer, which is connected to air, and we use incense to send our prayers out onto the wind. And of course, you know, you don't have to have incense to pray, but it can really kind of give your mind a focal point, something to concentrate on and to add energy to. And, you know, for folks who are just kind of learning how to use incense as a tool, you know, grab one little stick of incense, you know, hold it in your hands. And I like to say, smoke is the gift of air. May this smoke carry my prayers to the wind, and then light it, and that's it. Or you know, you can use any kind of similar prayer like that. And of course, you know, if you're into herbalism and different kind of oils and essential oils and things like that, you can make your own incense that corresponds to your own personal magic and prayers. And I definitely do a lot of that. So, my spare room is covered in jars of incense that are either completed or in progress. probably too much incense going on.
Yeah, I was going to say you could start selling that on the internet, make some bucks, but...
Yeah, one day.
One day, yeah, you're like, when I have two spare bedrooms full of incense, I'll start selling it. You know, yeah.
Right. And I love, I collect incense from certain places. Like if I go to, like little magical or spiritual stores in cities that I visit, and most stores kind of have in-house kind of crafted blend that they'll make. And I love that. And I love bringing it home and burning it because it kind of calls upon the spirit of place of wherever that is.
Nice. Yeah. It's really nice. Yeah, I love, I burn so much incense. I set off smoke alarms sometimes. My fiance's like, what are you doing here?
Oh, right.
What are you trying to do, burn the house down? I'm like, not today.
Especially that, especially the granular incense, you know, that a lot of people who aren't familiar with incense might not be familiar with, which is, you know, just the raw powder incense that you put on the charcoals, and that can bring up billows of smoke, and I know our Kevin's had the fire department called on us once or twice before. Because, you know, all it takes is just one extra pinch of that stuff, and the whole room's filled with smoke. Really good smelling smoke, but still.
Yeah, it's like going to get lung cancer from smelling incense or smoking it.
I know. Right.
I don't know. We'll have to do studies on that.
Tell us, look that up.
Yeah, really. Yeah. What about the different, you mentioned the Day of the Dead or, you know, Halloween. Mm-hmm. What's some other, isn't Beltane? I don't know. Beltane, I'm not pronouncing
yeah,
it correct. Correct
Beltane,
me, please.
That is absolutely correct. You know, it's one of those crazy Celtic-based words, so there's several different ways that certain areas say, you know, Beltane, Beltana. We are in the season of Beltane right now, which is, most people put it as around May 1st on the calendar or April 30th. And Beltane is the, day of fertility and the complete rebirth of nature. So if you look at it in the theological sense, it's the time when, the masculine, feminine, and divine come together to co-create, to give birth to new energies. So when, and, you know, in my tradition in particular, we try not to get super into gender dynamics and all of that, you know, because we have different forms of kind of sexual representation in our tradition. So we look at Beltane as partnering, as you, as a magic worker, partnering with things that you see as opposite of you. So like earlier, we were talking about taking things that feel, you know, that we feel resistant to, things that are opposite of us, and we integrate those fully into our being. So for us, Beltane is about those two different opposites, putting them together and using that resistance to add energy to our goals.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, I saw that somewhere. You know, I go on Facebook all the time and I'm subscribed to follow so many different things, but I saw that.
Right.
And our favorite season, Yule. Well, it's my favorite season. How would people...
Oh.
Yeah, I love Yule for me. That's my favorite. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about Yule is that most people celebrate it in some way already. If you've ever had a kind of traditional Christmas celebration with, you know, having a Christmas tree or exchanging gifts, anything like that, then mm-hmm. you've participated in a Yule custom, because all of that comes from the ancient pagan winter solstice tradition. You know, in Wiccan theology, specifically, Yule is when it's the time when the god is born of the dark goddess. You know, it's the sun rising up out of the dark time of the year. So Yule for us is a time of renewal, rebirth, kind of literally and figuratively. And, you know, the Yule tree, which, you know, is the Christmas tree, that's, you know, we bring an evergreen tree inside because it represents the permanent empowering life cycle of nature that, you know, falls away and dies in one aspect, but really is alive and within us at all times. That's what the evergreen tree represents. So, you know, we'll decorate. Yeah.
Cool.
You know, the evergreen trees, their life force descends back into the earth, but outwardly they're still alive. So it's that evergreen presence of spirit. And, you know, with the tree, you decorate it with, you know, the little ornaments and those are magic charms. You know, they sometimes get passed down from the family. Sometimes they're things that just look beautiful and magical or bring joy to our hearts. You know, those are our talismans. We've put them on the tree.
Oh, that is so cool. I did not know that. Here I'm doing all this stuff for 10 billion years and didn't know it.
Yeah, the shiny ball ornaments, those are actually called witch balls. And the idea was that if the spirits of disease and sickness would come into the house during that time of year, which was a big problem in older times, a lot of people got sick and died in the winter, those things were seen as spirits, the spirit of illness and death. And the idea was that the spirit would look into that ball and see its reflection distorted, and it would get frightened and leave the house.
How cool is that? That is really cool. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. What
and
are some
so
other...
here's this this ancient pagan spell tradition that you can find in the shelves of Target every year.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. What the heck's going on? I'm sorry about that. I don't know what's going
That's
on.
Right. What?
Yeah, no, I don't know. Something came up on, you know, and I don't know. I don't know what my fiance is doing, but he's a dork. But anyway, let's go through some other of the holidays that, you know, the holidays. What are some others? I know we went through Ostara last time. That's kind of like the Easter holiday.
Right. Well, did we do Ostara?
Yeah,
completely last time, right? Okay, good. Well, that's perfect then, because we talked about Ostara last time, and we just talked about Beltane, which is right after. So the next one that comes up is Litha, or Midsummer, and that is the summer solstice in June.
Mm.
So, yeah, on the summer solstice, it's one of those days that most people are aware of, because we'll get excited about kind of counting down the days to summer. But most people really don't think of it as anything important beyond that. But the summer solstice is a really powerful day magically. It's seen as a day when the veils between the worlds are particularly thin, especially the world of fairy and humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So most people have seen that popular painting of A Midsummer Night's Dream, the girl bending over and there's all the fairies around her. That's what Midsummer reminds me of. You know, it's the enchantment on the summer air. And it's powerful because it's the longest day of the year. And, of course, the sun is seen as a symbol of our projective strength, our projective will. So it's believed that any magic that's worked on the summer solstice is, you know, triple, quadruple, whatever it is, its strength. It's a lot more impactful.
Wow, I did not know that. Cool. That's great. Yeah, because
I
always did some kind of ritual with, you know, manifesting things on that day or, you know, what I wanted to manifest. So, you know, that's what I would do in my strange way. In my strange way. And it did work. It's really cool how that works. Yeah, the longest day of the year. Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. So what's after that? Well, you know, a little bit through that, because you mentioned it in the book, so yeah, just, you know, for Wicca 101.
Yeah. Well, there's only two more left before Samhain, so, and that's perfect, because they're both kind of similar in theme, but the Samhain after Midsummer is called Lunasad. Its Catholicized version would be Lammas, L-A-M-M-A-S, and they're both on the same day, either August 1st or 2nd, depending on tradition. And Lunasa is considered the first harvest day. The name comes from the god Lu, from Celtic mythology, and he's a god of strength and skill. So on Lunasa, essentially it's the first harvest, so it's the harvest of the grain before the big harvest. So we celebrate the fall of the wheat, and that's really seen as kind of the decline of the sun god. So here we have the sun god who on Midsummer was at his full height is now starting to slowly see his strength wane and fade. And for us, it's a celebration because we get to take stock of, you know, all of our success throughout the time leading up to that. So we're reaping the harvest of the things that we've sown. And Lunasa is a time when we play a lot of games. We have games of strength and skill and luck and chance. And we do all of that as kind of a big working to bless the rest of the harvest season. And you know, most people don't grow their own food in, say, America these days. So, of course, yeah. The harvest for us is the things that we put energy into that we're seeing the results of.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And then the next one is the last one.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
The last one before Samhain is called Mabon, M-A-B-O-N, and that's one of the definitely lesser known holidays, and
yeah.
that is the fall equinox, the autumnal equinox. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's in late September, and that's the second harvest. So, you know, say in the ancient harvest cultures, you know, the first part of the harvest, the grain would be done in August, and then the second part was kind of everything else, everything that you didn't get for the mm-hmm. first harvest. So people would have a lot of food, a lot of grain, a lot of bounty, and that was everything you had to prepare for the winter. So essentially, it's Thanksgiving for us. It's
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It's our modern Thanksgiving time. Whereas Lunasa, we did a little bit of that. We were still working. You know, there's still work to be done. You know, the strength of the sun is only just starting to fade. On Mabon, you can really feel the things starting to fade. You know, the days are noticeably getting shorter from Mabon on. So we take time to relax and celebrate. So people will have family celebrations, feasting. Absolutely. Lots of feasting.
Yes, of course. Food's the best part.
Lots of food. Yeah, and the weird thing about people get confused about, oh, why would you have Thanksgiving in September? Well, the thing is, a lot of cultures had a Thanksgiving-like celebration, but it was dependent on their specific harvest time. So it really, you know, the Thanksgiving in England is different from the Thanksgiving in my region of the United States, from the Thanksgiving of the Pacific Northwest. But, you know, we all kind of generally use the autumnal equinox as a convenient date. That's kind of in the middle of all of that.
Wow, that's great. And then you talk about something I thought was interesting. You call it the poor pagan syndrome. We're talking about abundance. What is that? What is the poor pagan syndrome? What does that represent?
Yeah, the poor pagan syndrome is, New Age folks would identify it as the concept of having poverty mind, mm-hmm. Which is the idea that, you know, we are not deserving of abundance and prosperity as spiritual beings. You know, we should be detached from all worldly things. And as a result, some people in spiritual practice set up lives for themselves that is constantly in a state of want. And really that's antithetical to what Wicca and witchcraft is supposed to be about, because we're an earth-based embodied practice. And that means that we, you know, honor our lives in the world of spirit, but we also have to equally respect our lives in the world of form. And having successful lives in the world of form means that, you know, we have enough money to feed our families, to live, to, you know, the pursuit of living comfortably is definitely an honorable pursuit. And a lot of folks can have trouble with that. And I don't like to blame Eastern religion for that, although a lot of pagans do. The issue, I think, where that comes from is a misunderstanding of Eastern religious practices, which is, you know, detachment from material things. You know, material things lead to suffering, as we see in Buddhism. But really, the problem is detachment to the core outcome. So, you know, you could look at in Buddhism, the ideas do not have attachment to the happiness at the end of all that stuff you attain.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say that you can't have happiness kind of in process of all of that stuff or all of the things that surround your life. It's kind of weird and hard to explain, but really if someone kind of looks at any kind of core teaching in, you know, either Eastern mysticism or Western mysticism, you see the same thing, which is, you know, the pursuit of desire, the pursuit of happiness. And that means happiness on all the worlds.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, our time's running short. This is really nice.
Wow.
I really enjoyed having you on. I hope you write another book soon. That would be good. You got a lot of knowledge. Really? You got another one? Wow, that's great.
Yeah, the second one is it's called Teen Spirit Wicca, and it's specifically going to have a younger audience, and it's going to just kind of talk about my experience of growing up in the craft. And
cool.
Advice kind of for teenagers exploring that.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, let me know. I would love to have you back on. And where can we find your book and everything? How can we find you?
Well, the book is available on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble online. Folks can also order it from my website, daviddsalisbury.com.
Great. Well, David, I appreciate you coming back on again. It was an honor. It was a pleasure. You're a great guy.
Thank you for having me.
It was great. It's always a pleasure. You take care, and thanks, everyone, for listening. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.